I do this podcast for many reasons. Number one, it's a positive time killer while I'm out on the road touring. It keeps me busy, keeps me creative and in a non-musical way, which I enjoy. Number two, it gives me a good excuse to stay in touch with friends and have them come on the podcast to shoot the shit and hang out. And number three, it gives me a reason, an excuse, to meet people that I might not have had any reason to meet other than me being a fan of theirs and getting to talk or hang out with them for 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. There have been past episodes with Henry Rollins, Caton DePena, Scott Thompson, and Lydia Chris, who I didn't know personally before the recording started, but after the talk was so glad to have gone through the experience of introducing myself and being given a platform to fanboy out on them. However, this episode, even though it's with someone I admire, is somewhat different from all that. And why wouldn't it be? It's with Harley Flanagan, one of a kind, a man who is synonymous with New York hardcore. I have been listening to his band, the Cro-Mags, since I was a teenager. Their album Age of Quarrel struck a nerve with a lot of people when it came out, me included. It wasn't your ordinary record. It had the uncanny ability to cross genres, mix with different scenes, and reverberate with people from both the underground and the mainstream with cred intact. A feat few bands have been able to achieve unscathed by criticism. Even though it's been 31 years since its release, it has not diminished with age, but rather managed to garner even more fans. Upon first glance, when I would see photos of Harley during the Age of Quarrel days, he struck me as a very intense dude. He oozed danger. He oozed anger and rage, something that I could immediately identify with and connected with. When I read his autobiography, Hardcore, A Life of My Own, it confirmed all my suspicions about him. And then when I finally met him just recently to do this podcast, it was like nothing else. Intense? Yes, of course, but also gracious, welcoming, and upfront. I don't think Harley does things halfway or half-assed. It's always on 10 and always worn on his sleeve. I don't think the word concession is even in his vocabulary. This episode is Harley shooting from the hip, holding nothing back, speaking from the heart. If you are unfamiliar with the Cro-Mags, unfamiliar with the almost soap opera-like history of the band, well, read Harley's book. But it must be noted here that there are serious rifts between members. And I want to clearly state that I'm not taking any sides here, really. I, along with everyone else, would simply love to see the Age of Quarrel Cro-Mags back together again, even if for a brief stint. Anyway, here is my talk with Harley Flanagan. Much like the episode with Henry Rollins, episode number 28, it's a talk with someone that runs deep with me, but any nervousness I initially had shortly fell by the wayside because Harley was so cool towards me. Here's a little glimpse as to how much of a keener I was for this to happen. I showed up to the Coalition Lounge, the club where Harley was scheduled to play, really early. So early, no bands were there yet. It was an amateur move. It was cold. It had rained. I was underdressed. I knew nobody there. And all this immediately made me feel like I was 15 again. A perfect setup to meet Harley. After their sound check, the two of us tried to find a quiet place to record the chat, and we ended up outside of the building lobby next to the club. This explains why there's a bit of background noise on this episode. It almost seems like it was purposely laid onto our talk for ambience. I find it a fitting soundtrack since it's Harley, and so much of his book takes place on the streets. I wouldn't have had the balls to try to do this podcast because I was pretty intimidated of Harley, kind of like I admired him from afar. But Harley's book, Hardcore, A Life of My Own, came out on Feral House Books. I have a book coming out on Feral House next year called I've Got Something to Say. So the Feral House connection was enough to make me grow a pair and try and see if I could wrangle Harley onto the podcast. So with that, I would like to thank Christina Ward from Feral House for hooking this up between Harley and I. Thanks, Christina. Also, supreme thanks to the people at Coalition Lounge. Harley's show was part of the Not Dead Yet Fest in Toronto, and that night the show was stacked with an incredible lineup of bands alongside Harley, from Gasm, Red Death, Fury, Witch Trial, and of course, Career Suicide. And thanks to Harley for this, and Harley's band and crew. I hope you enjoy this. This is with someone who I have been listening to and watching since I was a kid. Talking to Harley Flanagan face-to-face was surreal for me. If I could tell my awkward 15-year-old self that this would happen, I wouldn't have believed it. Thanks to Blue Mic microphones and Skullcandy headphones. Thanks to Chino Loco's restaurants, because when I want a fish burrito, I want it stuffed with chow mein noodles. Harley Flanagan is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-host. Cool. Hello for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Jimmy in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Down. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-host. Download for free on SoundCloud and iTunes. Sometimes Damien from Fucked Up stops by and hangs out too.
There's only one podcast to listen to in this world, and that's the Danko Jones Podcast. Don't be a dick. Don't be an ass. Just listen to the Danko Jones Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready, because the Danko Jones Podcast starts now.
First of all, I gotta say that this is, I've been fucking very freaking out over the possibility of meeting you and talking to you, and the fact that we are kind of both gonna, you are on Feral House and I'm gonna be on Feral House, just to have a connection with you in any way, being from Toronto, man, I had to see when I heard that you were coming down, I had to see if I could get you on the podcast. And I just wanted to start and tell you that, you know, from when I was a teenager, looking at pictures of you, Age of Coral, listening to you, and the We Gotta Know video, you shaped how I approach, and I think not a lot of people talk about this about you, you shaped how I perform, how I, whenever I make a grimace in photo shoots, I'm trying to channel you, man. And you've been like a big inspiration, also from how the Cro-Mags were back in the day with the Krishna consciousness. I never got into Krishna, but I was around it, and just seeing you guys looking all tough, you scared me, intimidated me, but you also had this Krishna side to you. It was the same thing that I thought of when I heard Minor Threat and I heard Ian MacKaye's lyrics. It was just like such a mind fuck coming from I come from the metal world. I'm a metal kid who got into you during the crossover days. So that was such a mind fuck, and I wasn't really into all that stuff that I would see all the metal bands get into. So you guys, Minor Threat, Youth of Today, and Rollins really helped me get confidence to just go, I'm not too into this, I just like the music and I like it heavy. I just wanted to start with that, man.
Well, thank you, man. I'm honored to have played a part in your life by being part of your soundtrack, and sounds like being you know, somewhat inspirational, and that's to me, that's one of the greatest gifts that you can have in life, is to be able to influence other people and to hopefully influence them for the better, you know. And And, you know, thank you, man. Thank you for having me on your show. And it's really great to be back in Toronto, man. I haven't been here in a long time. And,
yeah, I was going to ask, yeah.
Man, it feels really good. The vibe is great. This neighborhood is so cool. And I'm really looking forward to the show.
There's a photo I had since I was 15, and it's a picture of you, John, and Lemmy. And you were on that tour. I think you actually posted it on Instagram.
I may have.
Not too long ago. The exact photo is what I had, and it's like Lemmy's like touching your muscles, both of you guys' muscles.
Yeah.
And that photo, man, for me, embodied everything that I was into. Because just the fact that you guys were into Motorhead and the whole metal
thing.
Motorhead
made me, you know, is one of the key ingredients in what made me the bass player that I am.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I attack the bass and the instrument. I mean, I have played with a lot of people, and every person I've ever played with them, I've made them really understand Motorhead, you know, if they didn't already, you know, because I'm like, that's always been one of my biggest criticisms of hardcore bassists, is that none of them understand how to attack the bass rhythmically the way the kick and snare drum interact with each other. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can't lock into that groove, you shouldn't even be playing an instrument.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, man, again, thank you, man. And you know something, Lemmy, he's one of the few people that I've met in my life that I can really say that that's a guy that I really looked up to and still, you know, still look up to as a mentor and just such an iconic person, and to have been a friend of his, man. It's a real privilege, you know. Life is short, and you're really blessed and fortunate when you meet people who have that kind of impact and who inspire you like that, you know. I'm lucky. I've met a lot of really cool people in this short stay on this earth, you know.
Lemmy took us out on tour in 2008. Mm-hmm. So when Lemmy took us out on tour, we were doing the tour, the first thing I thought of is like, we're following the Cro-Mags. That's what I felt. That's what I thought. And seeing the connection he had with you guys, and it wasn't about whether, because back then it was all about like, do you have long hair, or do you have short hair, or do you
yeah
have hair?
Yeah.
And Lemmy didn't seem to give a shit about it. He just cared about,
well, you know what,
he
was, yeah, he was beyond all that, man. Yeah. You know, and I mean, back then, you know, I mean, Lemmy's seen me at all different stages of life. I met him when I was a little kid before the Cro-Mags was a band, and I remember telling him that I just started the band, I think. We didn't even have a record out, and I was hanging out with him, and I was like, I got my band called the Cro-Mags. What would it take to get on tour with you? Like, I saw their first New York show, and I got to hang out with him and Phil, and, you know, and party, and so it's like when I first met them, I was a kid and I was out drinking with them and doing speed and picking up chicks and everything. And then when I met them again, I had kind of wound down my madness a little bit, you know, in the Hare Krishna phase of my life. But I was still smoking weed back then. But meanwhile, Lemmy was totally, you know, drinking from the all day, all night, and awake for days at a time. You know, I mean, we were totally different type of people. But you know what? I'm a genuine person, and no matter what I'm doing, you know, real people can tell that, you know. And then again, I met him years after that, and when I was all relapsed and all fucked up on drugs again. And then, fortunately, I made it through all that. And Lemmy is awesome, dude. But I can't. We could talk about Lemmy for this whole interview.
Yeah. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is like an angle that I was telling you earlier that maybe you don't get asked a lot. It's just because I'm going to be on Feral House, and you're on Feral House. Your book, Hardcore, I read it last year when it came out. I tore through it, and then I told everyone that they have to read it. And to me, it was like, yeah, it's like, you know, an autobiography that, you know, there's redemption in it, and, you know, you go down to the depths and then you rise.
Yeah.
But what really, I think, strikes everyone about it is the amount of fucking violence and the amount of stories that you have about people that, you know, people don't really, you know, hear about.
You know, I am actually a little surprised that people have found it so violent. I mean, because I took a lot of fights out. I took like a lot of violence out of the book. I took a lot of drugs out of the book. I took a lot of everything out because it's like you can only keep telling so many stories about this type of shit before it just gets redundant, you know. But I mean, you know, the people who were around back then, they know that what I'm saying is true. Like, it's really funny because, like, the only people who think he's exaggerating are people who don't have a fucking clue and have nothing to base their knowledge on. I mean, when I had my first book signing in New York, it was really funny. There's a gang I talk about in my book called the Hitmen. They were, like, the gang on my block when I was a kid. And these guys were, you know, literally hitmen. They killed people and they sold heroin. And they, you know, were fucking no joke. And there was a short period of time where I had a contract on my head with this guy called Pigman. Mm-hmm. And he's in the book. I talk about that. They called him Pigman because he used to wear a pig's mask when he'd pull up and shoot you. Or kick in your door and shoot you. Like, so he was like, you know, he was kind of like an urban legend, but, you know, like everybody knew about him, but if you had ever seen him, most likely you were dead. So when Big Man started looking for me, like, so anyway, I'm not gonna give the story away, but at the book signing, some of the hitmen came to the book signing. You know, we're all like adults now, so it wasn't like they came with beef. They just came to get a book and shit, you know? And like people I went to school with and like people from the neighborhood came. And everybody was like, yo, man, you nailed it. This is exactly what it was like down here. Like, I bought this book for my friends because they don't believe me when I tell them the stories. And I'm like, no, you got to read this shit. And I asked one of the dudes, I'm like, so I never knew who Pigman was, all right? Because he was always behind the mask. I said, yo, man, I knew all the hitmen. I was like, yo, so who the fuck was Pigman? And I'm like, oh, that was Crazy Eddie. And which was a brand of PCP we all used to smoke. So this one cat, Eddie, he was a big dusthead. He was Pigman. And it was really funny to finally, after all these years, put a face behind the, you know, put a face behind the person behind the mask. And
so you knew who Crazy Eddie?
Yeah, I knew all those motherfuckers. They were like killers, dude. And so I'm like, so what's he up to now? He's like, oh, he got an auto body shop in Brooklyn. He's got grandkids and shit, you know. And it's like some total, like, it's like something out of, like, you know, Goodfellas or some shit, you know. It's like something out of a Scorsese film, you know. It's so funny. But, like, that, it was the life. I mean, it really was nuts, you know. So, you know, when people, you know, when you wonder why I, you know, why I am the way I am, you know, read the book, you'll know why.
Well, the best part about the book to me was how it was written. It's like it reads like you're just like talking to the reader.
You know, it's funny because when I first started writing it, I wanted it to really have my voice. When I first started trying to write it, I'd never written anything, and I'm not really much of an intellectual. I haven't read a lot of books and shit, and I dropped out of school very young. So, you know, when I first started trying to write it, every time I started, it sounded really contrived.
Right, yeah, right.
You know, like, you know, just, you start thinking, and once you start thinking, it already starts turning into shit. Like, you just kind of have to let it flow. Because as soon as I started thinking about what I was trying to write, I sounded like some intellectual asshole breaking it down instead of like it was like someone that had experienced it.
So that's why I was going to ask you, like, was there someone who, like, ghost wrote it?
No, man, I wrote it. No,
it sounds
my,
like
you
you're
know,
just talking
no,
to
No, well, that's
someone.
What I did. I mean, actually, a lot of it started from an interview that I did, and then I wound up taking the stuff from the interview, and I started, well, I tell you in the book, I mean, it's like I started writing in the late 90s, when I was like, no, early 90s.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I started writing in the early 90s, and I went through several different things. It was more of a diary, not a diary, but it was like a journal. Like, let me put it this way. I didn't think I was going to stick around for too long, the way I was living at that point. You know, I was really out of control. And so, you know, I figured, you know, most of the, I don't want to say greats, because I don't want to put myself in that context, but, like, all the great rock and roll fuck-ups, who never got to tell their stories because they died too young or they died too unexpectedly or just, you know, they got hit by a bus or they OD'd, you know, and I knew I wasn't going to live forever. And I said, you know what, if I don't start writing my story down, some other asshole is going to write it when I'm done, when I'm gone, and they're going to get it all wrong. They're not going to understand why I was the way I was. They're not going to understand what drove me to be the way I was. And they're going to, it's going to be some self-serving bullshit. Like, you know, John will write another book. It'll be that asshole Harley, or this is why, you know, whatever. Or Paris will write. And all of a sudden, it'll be someone else's story about me. And you can't really entrust someone else to tell your story, you know? So that's when I really started writing. So, like, my journal and that interview kind of meshed together. And then once I had that as the foundation, that's when I started writing, like, the book. That's when I knew that, okay, I'm working on a fucking book now. And eventually, I wound up getting an editor. And I wound up marrying the editor.
Okay, right.
It's mentioned
in the, like, front pages.
Yeah, yeah. So my wife edited it. And, like, but it's all... You know, I wrote the book, and I mean, it would have been like, you know, 1,000 pages long had she not come in and made sense out of it. Because, you know, it, like I said, I took out so many fucking fight stories and so many drug stories and so many, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll and the bullshit. It just goes on and fucking on, you know. I'm not writing the fucking, like, the 12 cantos of being a fuck-up, you know. It's not like, you know, it can't just go on. It's not the Mahabharata of fucking hardcore, you know.
Right.
But, you know, but she really reined it in and turned it into something that was readable, because it was like 1,000 pages with no commas or periods. It was like one sentence,
okay,
you
so
know.
She was like,
yeah, she, yeah, you know, she's got a PhD and shit, you know. Oh, she, okay. Yeah, in literature and shit. So,
okay,
yeah,
well,
so, you know.
If
so
there's
she,
anyone.
Yeah, but even when she first started looking at it, she started correcting the grammar and this and that. And I was like, no, you can't do that. And she was like, no, but this doesn't read correctly. I'm like, yeah, but I don't give a fuck if it doesn't read correctly.
Right.
If someone went in and corrected Goodfellas, it would suck.
Right.
This shit has to be my voice. It has to sound like me talking, or otherwise it turns into a fucking it turns into a lecture. Like, I saw some fucking old white dude giving a lecture on hip-hop and graffiti. I'm like, what the fuck? To a bunch of young, like, black and Puerto Rican kids. I'm like, are you fucking joking me? This fucking nerdy old white dude is giving these fucking kids a history lesson on hip-hop and fucking, you know, granted, they're all probably too young to know the roots of any of it, but it's like, dude, man, get fucking Melly Mel or somebody with some real experience to come up here and teach these kids, you know? You don't even talk like, you know, like one of them, you know what I'm saying? So, the few publishers that I had looked to before Feral House, you know, they were all like, you know, trying to fix grammar and this and that, and you know, some of the people that I showed... I wound up going with Feral House because really they were the only people brave enough for this story.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I mean, because they're kind of the people. They're like, they don't care how nuts it is or how offensive or how whatever. They'll throw it out there and see what happens. And
I think their tagline is "most dangerous publisher."
You know. So with that in mind, I said, you know what? They have a couple things that have turned into movies and shit, and so, you know, maybe this is a good place for me. And I've actually had a bunch of people who are coming at me that want to turn my book into a movie, or do a movie that's based on the book, you know.
Well, that's the thing about the book is it tells two stories at the same time. It tells your in your voice, but it also tells the same story with all the photos that you jam pack in there.
Well, you know, I tried to use a lot of photos because, again, it's really an unbelievable story, you know, and unlike most of the hardcore heroes and so on, I can actually prove all the shit I'm saying, and a lot of the people who claim they've been around since the beginning of time are actually full of shit. And, you know, I'm not gonna start like saying this particular person or that particular person, but a lot of, you know, New York hardcore legends are nothing more than legends.
Right.
You know, a lot of these people were not around when I was a kid, you know what I'm saying, and a lot of them claim they were. And, you know, really, show me one photo with you at a Ramones gig or hanging out with Debbie Harry. Show me one fucking picture with you standing in the corner or the background of Max's.
Right.
You know? Not even looking cool, just looking like a nerd who just found the place for the first time. Like, show me one fucking piece of actual proof. Not a photo of you standing against a wall that could be any wall taken in any year.
Yeah.
Show me a picture of you on stage rocking, motherfucker.
No, I mean, that's why the book is so captivating for the reader. And that's why it took me like five, I just tore through it. I swear to God. And then I told everyone I knew who was interested, you got to read this book. But the thing that you mentioned was you started working on it in the early 90s. It came out only last year.
Yeah, well,
so did your writing voice change?
No, I mean, I first started trying to write it, I had the what I said. I was like, it just sounded too, yeah, I was writing, you know, instead of just flowing. And it took me a while to figure out that that was just not the fucking way to do it. Not for me. You know, that might be a good way for other people to do it. That shit didn't work for me. The book would have sucked, you know?
Yeah.
And I also, you know, I never read the other guy's book because I didn't want to know. I was like, you know what, I don't want to be affected by anybody else's shit. I want to tell my story. If other people tell some of the same stories, you know what, they're not going to be told the same because, first of all, they're probably full of shit. They're probably lying. And second of all, everybody experiences and sees things from their own perspective. Right. So it's not going to be told the same way. Yeah. So, and I also thought it might be refreshing for people to hear the other side of the story in certain areas, you know.
So it's like 400 plus pages. You said that it could be 1,000.
It could have easily been 1,000.
So the what is it? 550 pages that were edited out.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be like a sequel or another book?
You never know. I mean, I was joking with my wife, and I was like, my follow up book is going to be called Things I Left Out.
You know? That's just it. It's like, yeah, like when it was done, I was like, so that's it. Like,
well,
I want some more stories of crazy.
Yeah, well, hopefully the next book won't have too many crazy stories except for the ones I tell from back then, you know, because my life is really, really great, man. I mean, you know, of course, you know, everybody's got their things that happen that suck, but, you know, I gotta say, I'm really happier than I've ever been, you know. More at peace with myself and the world around me than I've ever been, you know.
I did want to ask you about the Feral House. So when the book came out, did you do like a lot of promotional events for it? This is just strictly.
No, I really didn't. I did one book signing in New York. I did one in L.A. and I'm doing one in Rome. That's it. You know, my band's called Hardcore. The book's called Hardcore. I figure every time we do a gig, it's we're doing promotion for the book. You know, I actually had like I sold like almost 3 boxes of books yesterday. I only have like 5 fucking books left. I brought a bunch of books that I was bringing to Canada, and I fucking sold them all yesterday, dude. I sold $700 worth of books in fucking like an hour, man.
So what does that say? Either the book needs to get out more. There needs to be a third printing, or
You know what? I think just a lot of people were excited to buy it from me and get it signed and shit. You know, because I was doing the merch table. You know, it's like, you know, I like to meet the people at the show and let people, you know, see what I'm really like, and you know, I want to sit in the fucking dressing room all night. You know,
but it's an interesting thing now that you've done. You've put something out as an author, and you're so used to putting records out.
Mm-hmm.
Was there what's the difference between putting out a book to putting out a record? The one thing that struck me quickly was it's fucking slow. Like when Adam said, "Hey, we're gonna put out your book," I thought the book was coming out in 3 months, man.
Yeah, how little we know and how much we learn.
mine's not coming out till spring of next year.
Yeah, it takes some time, man. But you know what? So what? You know, actually, it's funny because the only person that I really spoke to when I was writing my book was Henry Rollins. And I was like, yeah, I'm working on this book. I'm almost done. And when he said to me, it turned out to be really great advice. He was like, dude, you know, he was like, well, he didn't say dude, first of all. I don't want to misquote my man Henry. All right. But he basically said, he said, take your time with it. Don't rush. Don't rush to try to finish it because it's got to be organic. You know, you're in no rush to hurry to put this thing out. And he was right because needed that time to turn into what it turned into. And it's really fucking ironic that the book was actually done. I was ready to deliver the motherfucker, and Webster Hall happened. And then I had no choice but to write another chapter.
Right.
And that wound up being the beginning and basically...
the beginning of the book.
Yeah, you know. Because once that shit went down, I was like, when we were doing the edits and this and that, and I was like, well, now I obviously got to write another book. I've just been to fucking Rikers Island and everything else. This has got to go in. And then... So in the final editing process, I remember thinking to myself, you know, when you send out demo tapes to A&R people, you want to make sure that the first thing they fucking hear is something that really punches them right in the face. Something that makes them want to listen to not just the rest of the song, but the next song.
Yeah.
So I was like, what's the most impactful fucking insane shit to start this off with? And I was like, yo, I just was all over the fucking news and like all over the world for this shit. This has got to start the book.
Another thing about the book, Anthony Bourdain is right on the cover as a
great guy,
as a like a quote.
Yeah, man.
How did you get him? And also, that's were there other story. Were no, there no. other big people's name, like big high profile names
well,
that
check
were?
It. All right, so you know, Henry gave me my first bit of advice. The only other person who gave me writing advice on this thing was Bourdain. So, I remember before we were done with the final edit, we were done. I became friends with him because, as it turns out, he saw me play when I was a kid back in the day with the stimulators and shit. Yeah, you know, exactly. So, you know, and as it turned out, we had a lot of mutual friends from back then. And, you know, I'm a jiu-jitsu instructor, and I knew his wife through jiu-jitsu, and I actually was teaching his daughter, and that's how I got to know him. And then one day he told me that he remembered me from back then. I was like, oh shit, you know. So we, you know, we became friendly, and you know, we just, he was really nice, really cool guy. And one day on a whim, I said, yo, you know, I really like the way you write, and I love your show, man. I got would you mind taking a look at the first few chapters of my book and tell me what you think? And he's like, sure, man, no problem. Give me however much of it you feel comfortable giving me. So I gave him like the first 6 chapters. He read it and he got back to me and he said, I think this is a really great book. I think it has the potential to be a movie. I think two of the characters that you need to bring into the book more are your mother and your Aunt Denise, because I think these are two really amazing characters that influenced your life in a tremendous way, and your Aunt Denise influenced so many people by being who she is, and they were both around so many fascinating and amazing things. And that really was really needed advice, because I had actually, and another thing he said to me, don't, you know, I told him, I was like, you know, you got kids, man. I'm holding a lot of shit back because I don't want my kids to be like, damn, dad, really? You know, you had to put this shit out there for everybody to read, you know, really? You know, I don't want them to be humiliated or be embarrassed or whatever, you know. And he was like, you know what, man, all that shit is out there. You know, if people want to know about this or know about that, all they got to do is like Google or whatever, or, you know. Exactly. And that's what made me think, too. It's like they'll get, not only will they get the information, but they'll get someone else's version of it, which is more likely going to be tainted with whatever their opinion of me is. So, you know, he was like, don't pull any punches and don't be ashamed of shit. So, between him telling me, you know, put more about your mom and your aunt in there, and don't be ashamed of shit and don't pull no punches. So I went back and I put a lot of stuff in there that was really painful for me. You know, a lot of my experiences with my mother that were really hard for me. You know, it's hard to deal with an alcoholic parent, you know. It just saying it makes me sad, you know. But, you know, God bless her, she got sober, was sober for 20 years until she died, you know, just a couple of years ago. And And, you know, it was hard for me to talk about a lot of that stuff. And then to talk about my father and how he died and stuff. It was a lot of really personal, painful things. But I think that it was stuff I not just needed to get off my chest, but it also makes for a really powerful book. And, you know, and thank God me and my mom became really close again towards the end of her life. And there was a long time where we didn't really speak, so it was all really part of a cleansing, you know.
The great thing about this book is how you did talk about that part of your life and show that side of you. Because for someone like me, who kind of looked up to you and was a fan of your music, my impression of you is when you're walking towards the camera in the We Gotta Know video and you've got this face like, I'm just gonna kill you, guy. And to me, I was like, if I can encapsulate that and put it on my version on stage, like, I mean, I think I'm halfway there. Then I'll learn guitar. And so,
reading, you gotta start with the attitude. Attitude is always the most important thing.
Then
you
there's
know?
Another
you can
have
shot. All the skill in the world, but if you got no attitude, it's gonna suck. You know,
there's a shot of, like, I think it's Doug in the car, and you're listening
to
Walkman, and they pan over to Doug, and you're like, you like photobomb the moment, and I'm thinking, this guy is like the craziest guy, and I don't even. You could just tell by, like, just these two minutes of this video that, you know, and then I read the book, you know, because I only knew the music.
Yeah.
I read the book, and I'm like, yeah, those two moments in the video, it's like, he's not even, like, putting this shit on.
Well, that's the funny shit is, like, you know, I was really always just fucking around and goofing around. Like,
right.
You know, whenever I'm mugging for the camera and all that shit, it really started because I used to be really self-conscious about standing there with photographers like, okay, guys, you know, it's about when we started doing, like, when crossover started happening, and it was like all of a sudden you got, like, Gene Ambo and this and that guy, you know, like, people taking pictures of you, and they're like, okay, guys, you know, and you're just like, what are you supposed to do? Like, okay, let's all stand here and cross our arms, you know, it's really kind of an uncomfortable place. So I just started going like, blah, making crazy faces, and the more I did it, the more the photographers were like, yeah, more of that, yeah, do that, yeah, now we're going, all right, you know. So I just, you know, to me it was just my way of, like, taking a embarrassing and somewhat humiliating part of my job and making it, you know, less uncomfortable.
But for me, watching all that at home when I was kid, I was like, all right,
look, man, I'm a character.
I'm gonna do that.
I'm a fucking Muppet. You know, what do you want from me? I'm like, you know, I'm a fucking freak, you know?
But knowing that, like, seeing that side of you, that's my first impression of you, and then reading the book and reading some of the more kind of softer emotional sides of your life and of your character, I think it was very brave. Especially in this scene of hardcore, where it's really a lot of chest beating,
yeah,
and a real,
it is. It's
you know,
a bunch of fucking chest beating, posturing bullshit. Most of these motherfuckers have ever really looked death in the eye. You know, it's like most of these fucking chumps, you know, if they've ever had a fight, it's been five of them beating up one person. You know, it hasn't been one of them fighting five people.
Right.
You know, then come talk to me.
Right.
You know, and you know, I mean, honestly, you know. I thought I was grown and smart and everything when I was in my 20s. When I got to my 30s, I realized I didn't know shit in my 20s, you know. And then I got to my 40s, and I realized I didn't know fucking jack shit in my 30s, you know. Now I'm fucking 50, and I'm like, you know, things are just starting to make a little bit of sense, you know. I'm like, wow, okay, you know. Because I know what life is and what it means, and it's like, I'm like, really? Don't you guys realize how fucking lucky you are that 30 years after that fucking album, people even know who the fuck you are? I mean, you should be, like, humbled by that shit, not, like, fully yourself. You should be like, damn, man, we really meant something to a lot of people. Like, we really owe it to ourselves and to those people to, like, put this bullshit aside, because, like, if we could do that, so many people would be so happy. So many people who never saw us would be so fucking happy. So many people that did see us would fucking come out of their fucking houses with their gray hair and their fucking walkers to see us again. I mean, it would really change something. To me, it would be such a beautiful statement that a bunch of motherfuckers who had nothing but fucking beef with each other could actually say, you know, fuck that. Life is too short and too precious, and who cares? But you know what? Everybody has faults. Nobody's faultless. I can acknowledge that I've said a lot of fucking stupid and dumb shit, and I've talked shit about John in the past and this and that, whatever, man. At some point, you gotta say, you know what? Who cares? You know? And if all those motherfuckers would come and sit down and have a talk, my doors are open. They've always been open. I'm not the one who can't get past myself. You know, that's what I think it really comes down to, is you have to learn how to get past yourself. You have to get past your own fucking ego, your own pride, your own arrogance, and then you can start talking like a fucking person. So you know what? I'm out here playing with fucking three fucking great guys. Gary Sullivan, my drummer, he played with the Cro-Mags actually longer than Mackie did. Gabby Abularash, he fucking played on Cro-Mags records. So I actually have more guys from the, if you want to break it down, I got more guys who actually played in the Cro-Mags in my band. And my man Artie Alexander, my new guitarist, he's a fucking great guy. And, you know, so I got a really solid group of guys who are all really happy to be out and playing. And nobody has a fucking ego, and nobody's out here thinking that they're fucking better than anybody, you know. So, you know, I'm happy, but I would be really happy to be able to bring the Cro-Mags back together for the fans if it was possible.
Maybe it's just personal and I'm projecting a lot, but I really identified with how you presented yourself on stage, and like I said earlier, just how you presented yourself in photos and just everything about how you presented yourself. For me, only me particularly, I can speak for, I connected and identified with it. I could identify with what you were emitting, the rage, the anger, but also, like you said, like you're like a Muppet, and I can identify with that too. Like I can identify with like someone who can mug.
That with pride, by the way, motherfucker.
Same with me. No disrespect. Ultimate respect, because you know I really took a lot from you, from a different, like, musical but non-musical as well. And when I was leading up to talking to you, I realized that I'm like, wait a minute, like I'm channeling Harley in like half the fucking photos we take.
You know, it's funny because I remember the day I realized that I was channeling a lot of Chuck Dukowski, and I didn't even know it. You know, I was like, I'm like, okay, because I always knew that I
he
have
wasn't exactly
no,
not
my, well, neither am I. I mean, oh, no, you know, I mean, wow. It's just like, you know, we just spaz out. It's just right. That unafraid to fucking grind that just like fucking get, you know. You see the dude here today with the Meg Harley and JJ hat, friend. He got this kid got a hat that says Meg Harley and JJ friends again. Yo, he posted that shit online. I wrote him. I was like, dude, you gotta send me one of those. Yeah, nah, you know what? I think people gotta get past that shit. I think people gotta stop making it their fucking business. You know? I know. But you know what the problem is there's a lot of people who feel like they need to take sides and shit. And I'm like, you know what? The whole world needs to fucking mind their fucking own shit. Like, if it's not your beef, let the motherfuckers who have that beef sort it out. Or be a fucking real friend and talk sense to both of them. Be a fucking meteor. Don't be like one of these fucking little bitch ass groupies who wants to like fucking, oh yeah, fuck him. It's like, yo man, all y'all motherfuckers grow up, man. Fucking be men. You know, people think I'm out of my mind. Yeah, I was out of my mind. Yeah, I still am out of my mind. But I'm also a reasonable fucking dude. You know, and you can talk to me. I'm not.
Well, if I can vouch for you, we kind of
I met you. You really cooled me. And then I introduced myself. You didn't know who I was.
Fuck, you know, I was talking to you, man.
We exchanged emails, but first it was in a handshake.
I thought you were just a weirdo standing in front of the club. Then you smiled, and I said, hey, what's up, dude?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can vouch for it. But, I mean, fuck, man, we've been going...
We better shut the fuck up, man. This thing's gonna be endless, bro.
But Harley, man, I just want to say, I met Ian, I met Henry.
Ian, those two of my fucking best guys right there. I love both of those dudes.
Both those guys,
solid people,
in their own way. I walked away really happy that I met them because I kind of had them on a certain level,
and they deserve to be.
Meeting you tonight and talking to you and everything. Same walk
brother,
away.
Man, thank you so much.
Thank you
man.
So much.
And you know what? I'm proud. I'm honored to be on your show. And that I have, like I said, the fact that my music and that I have been a part of your life, man. I'm very humbled by it. It's not. I'm not gonna walk away with a big head. I'm gonna walk away a little shorter than I already am.
Well, I told our bass player JC that I might be able to talk to you. Mm-hmm. So we were all just like in practice. We were just like fucking around. Mm-hmm. I go, hey, by the way, I think I might get Harley on the podcast. He stopped what he was doing. He's like, what? He stopped.
All right.
So yeah,
right.
It's a big deal for all of us.
Yo, man, it's been great, man, and hopefully one day our bands can do something together.
Oh,
you know,
shit, and to be on Feral House together with you,
yeah, man.
Good luck with that, you know. I always lead with that, going
right on, man.
Yeah, same imprint as Hardcore Harley Flanagan's book, you know. So yeah.
Yes, it's not self-published. And by the way, I don't care what anybody eats. Just be good to each other, be good to the world, and that's all that matters.
Cool, man. Thanks, Harley.
All right.